Welcome to the Remix My Fitness podcast. This is your host, MC Kim, the kind, intelligent man, and I'm here to tell you that there's more than one way to train, eat, and live. Welcome to the show. How are y'all doing today? How are y'all doing? I know I've been gone for a minute, and I've been pleasantly surprised at getting messages and emails and people on social asking, "Hey Jimmy, where'd you go? What happened to you? Where are you at?" And if I could be real honest with you, I just got lost for a minute, you know? I was doing all these things on the podcast and on social, and it just didn't feel right. And it didn't feel right to make, it didn't feel right to put out there, because I got lost. I got lost in what I was trying to do with this thing, why I wanted to do this in the first place, which was to serve you, the listeners, my clients who train with me, the people that do group classes with me, the people who take the time to listen, who are from my corporate fitness classes. I do this for all of you, to share what I know, to get guests out there who I think are doing it right and who will provide you with some really awesome information, and so that you don't feel lost in your own fitness journey. And for myself, I just, you know what I got lost in, if I could be real honest with you, just with the, I wanted to be Mr. Social Media, I wanted to be Mr. Podcast, and I wanted to have this like crazy hit shows and have this huge following, and for what, really? For what reason would I need to do those things if I am not able to be honest and share the information I want to share with you? So I'm back here. I want to start this off right with everybody. So on today's show, we are talking rehab, okay? We're talking rehab, we're talking injuries, we're talking about how to strengthen those little itty-bitty muscles that will help those big, huge muscles so that you don't get injured, or so that you can be stronger to lift heavier things. If you've been training to this point, let's say you started in January and you've been going on strong by now, you've gotten really strong and you feel a little bit more honed into your own body, but this is what I find. Once you get better at things, and once you start a rhythm of physical activity, you just start noticing things in your body a little bit more, a little bit of more aches and pains. Or if you already have those aches and pains for a little bit, you know that you just keep feeling it. It keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And if you've been feeling those aches and pains for a little while, look, I got the show for you. And I'm bringing on a special guest here today. His name is James Liu, and he runs a clinic here in Toronto, and it's somebody that I've had the pleasure of working with. He actually works on me for the last 6 months, and I gotta say, the dude is a wizard with his hands. He just finds those like spots where you just like, I didn't even know it was painful there. I didn't know that was causing something, but he finds that. And also the other half, I would say he's like a torture master, because I know it does some good, because that's why I've been continuing to see him. But man, I make faces and I say things that I wouldn't usually say, and definitely none of it is like camera friendly. So you'll never see a session with me and Lou where he's working on me, because man, it's not a pretty face, and the things that come out of my mouth are, I would hate for my children to hear those things. So I got James Liu from Liu Strength Therapy, and we go and we talk about neck pain, lower back pain, knee pain, hip pain, all the usual suspects of what people feel whenever they embark and start on a fitness journey. Also, funny enough, it's also all the things that they feel when they don't start on their fitness journey. So Liu dropped some serious knowledge bombs. So definitely check out today's episode. We talk a lot about different moves, and he gives examples. Obviously, it's through audio, so sometimes it can be a little bit hard to picture and imagine. So what was really generous of Liu was to do is he was able to provide me with some of his videos of the moves that we talk about today. So if you visit today's show notes at remixmyfitness.com/week15, WEEK15, you'll be able to see all the links to the different moves that Lou and I talk about. Because if you're looking to strengthen they'll strengthen your neck, lower back, your knees, and prevent any injuries. Definitely got to check out the moves that he's talking about. So, without further ado, I'm happy to be back, and here's James Liu. I want to welcome to the Remix My Fitness podcast one of the premier therapists in the game today. He is a Jedi with his healing hands and a wizard with the acupuncture needles. I want to welcome a good friend, James Liu from Liu Strength and Therapy. Hey, James, how's it going?
Hey, Jimmy, how's it going, man?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Thanks for coming on to the show today.
No problem.
So look, I brought you on because I meant what I said. You are a Jedi with your hands. And I know this for a fact because you actually treat me, and we've gotten to know each other over the last little bit. And I think you do an amazing job. You're so good at like pinpointing like the spots without even really me even telling you where that is. So why don't you start off by, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so my name is James Liu. I have a clinic in the East End in Scarborough. It's called Liu Strength and Therapy. Mainly specialize in manual therapy and strength and conditioning. Clientele can range from anywhere from like the average Joe to competitive athletes. I train and treat people in powerlifting, Olympic weightlifting, CrossFit, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and basically any sport could benefit from my services.
And why don't you kind of expand on what is manual therapy? What does that really mean?
So manual therapy is a general term healthcare practitioners just kind of use now. So under the healthcare professionals, there's chiropractors, physiotherapists, massage therapists, and osteopaths. Manual therapy is just a term that we use when we use our hands for a therapeutic effect. So that could be simply massaging somebody's neck. It could be pulling out somebody's wrists. Anything that where we use our hands for a therapeutic effect would be considered manual therapy.
Right. And this is, you weren't always doing this before. Like as you mentioned, you were doing strength training.
Yeah.
You're a strength training coach. You were helping people with their Olympic lifts, right?
Yep.
And how long were you doing that for?
Everything altogether, or just the strength and conditioning?
Just the strength and conditioning before you got into, you know, the manual therapy portion.
I'd say 2 or 3 years.
2 or 3 years, okay. And then
prior to therapy.
Yeah, and what led you to going from that to all of a sudden saying, well, you know what, why don't I also help treat these people that I'm also training?
Yep. Realistically, when I was doing strength and conditioning, I felt like my knowledge in rehab and therapy is very limited. So a few of my clients were getting injured, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to fix them. So I had to get kind of branch into like more like rehab and therapy to kind of understand what I was doing to actually, or how I could make them feel better. So a combination between manual therapy or just therapy in general with corrective exercise or strength conditioning, in my opinion, is one of the better ways of treating things. So instead of just treating the knee with massage or acupuncture or whatnot, which is one way of doing it, you also have to teach the person how to use their knee as well, and to strengthen the muscles around it as well.
Right. And on top of doing the manual therapy, or maybe you consider this manual therapy or not, but you also specialize in acupuncture, and you also do cupping, right? Is that correct?
Yep.
Yeah.
So acupuncture and cupping fall under the TCM, so traditional Chinese medicine scope of practice. In fact, under TCM, there is acupuncture, there is herbology, which is the study of herbs, along with cupping. So the way acupuncture works is there's obviously several theories on it. Acupuncture usually works really quick, but short term, whereas herbology usually works a little bit slower, but long term. So if you go to a Chinese medicine practitioner, they usually use the combination between herbology, which is long term, and acupuncture is short term. In my opinion, acupuncture is really good for acute disorders, so like inflammation, sprains, strains, and whatnot. But when it comes to chronic disorders, such as lower back pain for 10 years, in my opinion, it could still work. It's just it's not as effective as something else. And as for cupping is just cupping is getting really big in the past few years, more because of Michael Phelps. Because I think it was two years ago, he was seen with cupping marks all over his shoulders.
Right.
Not sure if you've seen that.
Yeah, for sure did.
But yeah, that brought a lot of exposure to cupping. And all cupping is, it's technically a form of myofascial release to increase local circulation to the area that's being cupped. So generally speaking, the darker the area gets, the less blood flow, or the more affected the area is. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with toxins. Like, toxins don't really leave the body through pores or anything, but it just increases circulation.
Sure. And I actually want to get into cupping a little bit more with you in a little bit. But also, speaking of something that I find very trendy is acupuncture. I've seen a lot of people over through the years, different chiropractors, different physiotherapists, and a lot of people have gotten into acupuncture. But more so, I've gotten shocked through the needles of acupuncture. Yep. You know, when I was a kid and I used to sprain my ankle, I would go see a Chinese medicine doctor, and they would do some crazy things, and almost my ankle would feel a little bit better. They never sent electrodes through my body until recently. Yep. And now I'm getting like needles in my butt, and they're sending electrodes. Like, tell me a little bit about that. Like, why has that become so popular to do?
So there's different forms of acupunctures. I like to call it the Eastern way of doing acupuncture, which is also known as, I would call it more of a, it's kind of like a total body approach. Where, example, if you had a lower back pain, as Eastern approach, they wouldn't put needles in your lower back. They'd put it probably in your foot, your ankle, and whatnot. So they preach more of what we call Chinese meridians, which is, are you familiar with Tom Myers by any chance?
Tom Myers, no, I'm not.
Anatomy trains. Anyways, so yeah, it preaches off Chinese meridians. So let's say the big toe on the right foot is connected to the lower back on the right side. So if you put a needle somewhere in the right foot, it could have an effect on the lower back. Whereas the Western way is, if your lower back hurts, we'll put needles in your lower back. Both work really well, but one is considered local acupuncture, which is Western, and one is considered distal acupuncture, which is more Eastern or Chinese.
Mm-hmm. A friend of mine's, his father is, you know, he's a traditional Chinese medicinist.
Yep.
I don't know if that's a real word. Yeah. But he always tells me whenever I go see him, you know, these types of things only work if you, the one getting the treatment, believes in the practitioner giving you the treatment. And I always found that very interesting, because I think that just applies more than in the Chinese medicine sense. Like, whether you're going to go see a doctor, whether you're going to go see a physiotherapist, if there's any doubt in your mind that whether or not this thing is going to work or not, it may not work or not, right? It may not work depending on the way you're thinking.
Yep. And I agree with that.
Yeah. And you've chosen the path of doing sports massage therapy, acupuncture, and cupping. Why do you believe that that is like one of the best ways to go and treat injuries, to treat pain?
Yep. So based on what my clients come in with, for example, for you, we've been dealing with your right knee and your right foot, and that's a chronic dysfunction, right?
Now you're telling my opponents what I'm weak at, and they're gonna attack me. Thanks, James. No, just kidding.
But yeah, that's more of a chronic disorder. And it's not really an injury. You have more of a dysfunction. Something's not working correctly, so something's turning out to compensate, right? In my opinion, manual therapy would be good for that, because we need to release specific muscles and then strengthen them afterwards. Now, if you came in with a right knee LCL sprain from training and it's swollen, I can't work on your knee. It's physically swollen. So that's where acupuncture comes into play, with specifically Chinese acupuncture, because needles do not touch the site of injury. So a right knee injury, you could technically use your left elbow, your right ankle, your right hip. There's a lot of different areas we can use, and that's one of the benefits of acupuncture. So yeah, depending on the assessment and what the client presents with, I would use a different modality. Mm. If it's chronic, I usually do manual therapy, sports massage. If it's really acute, such as under 5-ish days or even a week, and it's inflammation, I wouldn't touch it. It'll just make it worse. So acupuncture would be suitable for that.
Right.
Cupping is more for chronic as well. I wouldn't really cup anything too acute. If anything, we'll just make it worse, right? Mm-hmm.
And you know, I find if we can go and touch on cupping for a sec. You know, my yep. mom, like, I think when I was a teenager, she came back from Korea, and she, you know, she had this little special box that she bought, and she went out and she bought her own cupping set. And then next thing you know, it was like me and my dad were like her guinea pigs on how to do it. This isn't something that like you can just go and pick up and you go and do, or is it?
Technically, you can. You can technically buy cupping sets anywhere you like Amazon or eBay. Obviously, you cannot go around and offer cupping services to your buddies and everything. Cupping is on the scope of practice under TCM, which is now regulated in Canada. If you're doing it in your house, I'm sure nobody would know. But if you're going around offering services, then yeah, it's regulated, so you definitely can't do that. One thing I want to talk about too is you've heard of the word chi, right? So chi is it's kind of like misinterpreted or translated to English as energy. When we talk about chi, we think energy and whatnot. Chi actually means air or oxygen when it gets translated. And that air or oxygen is usually found in your blood, of course. So when somebody's saying they're increasing your chi through acupuncture or cupping or herbology, they're actually just increasing your circulation. That's about it.
So it's not like that.
It's not like magical energy.
It's not that shield of energy that you see in the Matrix or anything like that.
It misinterpreted.
Man, you're ruining my dreams here. I always imagine like when I'm breathing in, I have this like blue or gold aura that's coming around me.
It's the circulation.
Just blood circulation. Flow. Okay, fine. Yeah. Fine. Well, you keep your boring response. I'm gonna keep mine. Okay. So tell me, like, what would you say are the top, three reasons or top three people that you would come to see you, and what would like those injuries be? Or those pains, yeah.
In terms of like demographics or?
No, I guess not demographics. Like, would you say like a lot of people come in saying like, man, my lower back hurts or I got pain in my knee or my elbow hurts?
I'd say definitely lower back, followed by hips, specifically the front of the hips, and the neck and shoulders. Those are definitely the top three.
For sure. And funny enough, those are also like one of the top three. If I include like the knee, like those are like,
yeah, the knees are usually, yeah.
Yeah. Like the top three, four reasons why like someone will come see me.
Exactly.
I don't know if you ever run into this, but like, when someone tells me like, man, my lower back hurts and they'll come see me to strengthen their lower back.
Yep.
And I take the approach where, your lower back is actually fatigued because you're sitting all the time. You're doing something. So doing more lower back exercises. And I always use the example of doing like bicep curls, right?
Yep.
You can only do so many more bicep curls before your bicep just can't handle anymore.
Exactly. That's called fatigue. Exactly. Yeah.
And your lower back has taken so much pressure throughout the day. Because I always compare it to like, you are not just sitting at work, but you are sitting when you're relaxing. You're sitting when you're commuting. You're sitting when you're watching TV or sitting when you're eating, right? Like that's your head, your shoulders, everything just weighing down your back. So I actually get people to train their lower half. So I'll get them train their glutes. I'll get them train their legs. That when they're actually walking around and doing something, they'll take that pressure off their back.
Yep.
Yeah. So how would you treat someone who says to you like, look, James, my lower back hurts. Can you massage my lower back to make me feel better?
So that's a really good question because a lot of people have this understanding that if something hurts, you stretch it. It's just human nature. For example, if you wake up and your neck's tight, what do? You stretch it, right? But in reality, in most cases, that's not the case. The muscle is tight for a different reason. We'll use the lower back for an example. I have a lot of clients with lower back pain, and after I assess them, and the first question I ask is, what do you do to make you feel better? And the first thing they always tell me is, I stretch it. And I'm like, does it fix it? And they say no, because obviously they're here to get fixed, right? And I always tell them, like, then do you think stretching is the answer? And then they say no, right? So to go back to your question, instead of stretching a fatigued tissue or muscle, try to strengthen it. So instead of stretching your lower back, you could strengthen your lower back. Depending on their fitness level, of course, if it's sedentary, obviously I wouldn't have them do crazy amount of deadlifts. But we can start with some sort of like isometric exercise, like a Superman or like a bird dog or whatnot. Lately I've been noticing a lot of people getting into the whole mobility craze. Stretch this, mobilize that, but they need to understand why that issue started to begin with. And truthfully speaking, I've never seen it. Well, not say never, but most of my clientele, their lower back or lumbar spine is not stable. It's very, very unstable, meaning they should strengthen it.
And how can you tell whether someone has an unstable lower back?
You can just assess them with overhead squat, deadlifts, the way they sit, the way they stand. Usually with somebody with an unstable lower back, it's either hyperextended, so lordosis, hyperlordosis, or rounded, which is hypolordosis. So if you, a good example is, say somebody's doing a push-up, and I'm sure you've seen this all the time, and the lower back curves inwards.
Mm-hmm.
That's lower back. Well, that's technically the core not working and the lower back doing more work. Hence, you will have lower back pain.
Right. And is there anything else you would recommend for someone to do if they have lower back pain, so they can do Superman Superman move?
So yeah, it really depends on what I find during the assessment. And again, it's either stable or not stable, and most of the time it's not stable. So when the lumbar spine becomes unstable, whatever above it and below it will become stable to compensate. So above the lumbar spine is the thoracic spine, which is the middle back, and below the lumbar spine is the hips. And everybody complains about tight hips and a tight mid back, which would force the lower back to be unstable.
Mm.
And below the hips is the knees will be unstable as well. So in reality, it's much just the lower back. It's actually like a chain reaction throughout the entire body.
Exactly.
And the way I look at things, the lower it is to the ground, the more important it is. So for example, if you had an ankle sprain a few months ago, that could manifest into your lower back, into your hips, possibly into your shoulders. But if, let's say, you hurt your right wrist, very unlikely that could affect your lower back. It could affect your right shoulder or your left shoulder from compensation, but it's very unlikely you can actually go all the way down to the lower back.
Mm. And if we can kind of touch on the other common injuries that you see. So again, I run into the neck and the shoulder one a lot as well. So what would you say is probably one of the common reasons why that those things even happen in the first place? Like a lot of people who talk to me and say, well, it's because I'm on my phone a lot, or because I'm staring at my computer a lot. Would you say those are big things that attribute to someone having like low neck pain and shoulder pain?
I'd say for the general population, yes. So assuming they're just going to work 9 to 5 and office job, then yeah, poor posture can contribute to that. Again, with my clientele, they're powerlifters, weightlifters, jiu-jitsu, and in these sports, it's pretty one-dimensional. Most people are in the sagittal plane, which is going flexion and extension within one dimension. Another good example is a powerlifter. And in powerlifting, there's a squat, bench, deadlift, and there's no row. There's nothing to kind of pull you back in position. So usually powerlifters present with rounded shoulders. If your shoulders are rounded forward, your neck has to follow, your head has to follow, and then the symptom is you have neck pain for a different reason, though. So simply just, you could stretch your neck and everything. It would do you good temporary relief, but it's always going to come back until you actually fix the root cause. And the root cause in an issue with neck pain, shoulder pain, is usually not the neck and shoulders. It's actually something a little bit lower. Again, it could be the thoracic spine. It could be your rib position. It could be your shoulder blade position. And that, in my opinion, corrective exercise goes a longer way than therapy when correcting that issue.
Hmm. And when just if we could use someone as an example, let's say we'll use like general population,
sure.
Here. They come in, they see you, and they say, "Hey, my neck, my shoulder hurts. I don't really do any exercise."
Yep.
You've assessed them. What would be like? How would you get them started to doing something to help with that? You say like strength and conditioning exercises.
Yeah.
What would be like one or two things that you would tell them to do?
Specifically for neck and shoulder pain?
Specifically neck and shoulder.
I would generally teach them how to get back to a neutral position. So one of my favorite exercises, I'm sure you've heard of this too, are chin tucks, which is simply giving yourself a double chin. Another great exercise is to strengthen the deep neck flexors. So you can do it if you're laying on your back, tuck your chin in, and then lift your head off the table an inch or two. That will strengthen the very small deep neck flexors, which are extremely weak on most people. Those are usually the first two exercises I would prescribe somebody with neck pain. If it comes to the shoulders, assuming you do have rounded shoulders, I'd focus more on the thoracic spine. So foam rolling the thoracic spine, improving somebody's thoracic rotation or extension would be up there. Trying to teaching them how to get back into neutral, essentially.
Right. And you actually, you have these videos on your Instagram page,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, so what I'll do is I'll pull, if you don't mind, I'll pull those and I'll put them in my show notes here.
Perfect.
For all those that are listening, James has he's got a very popular Instagram channel or Instagram page,
Page.
and that's at Lose Strength, right?
Therapy. Yep.
Sorry, Lose Strength Therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so definitely check that. That will also be in the show notes. So all the exercises that me and James are talking about right now, I'll make sure
It's
I have
fine.
those
Yep.
categorized into the different things. So you said chin tucks.
Chin tucks, lip offs, those are the top two. I do have a video with all of those along with an additional exercise. It's called a suboccipital malfascial release. Essentially what it is
Slash tongue twister.
yeah, it's a two balls in a sock, tie the ends so it creates a little like a peanut. Put that on the ground, lay on top of it, and simply just relax. It's a little painful at first, but it feels really good afterwards if you experience any neck pain.
Yeah, and you have me doing that. You have me
Yeah.
doing that little peanut move, but
Yeah,
for
the
my
hips.
hips, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of pain. I think that's a
It's
little
a
bit of
little
an
painful,
under exaggeration there.
yeah.
But no, but it does feel good after.
Feels really good, yeah. But yeah, sorry, with that, that's considered a release. So you can't just release the tissue and then that's it. You have to stabilize the opposing tissue as well. So in your case with your, I believe it was your right hip, right? When you release that, a good exercise you can do afterwards, clamshells. You can do some sort of glute bridge. Anything that activates the opposite muscle tissue would be indicated. So in a case with the neck, you release the back of the neck, activate the front of your neck.
And that's those all great, and yeah, those moves are also like moves that I also get the people that I train with to do too. Those chin tucks are very, very popular. And probably one of the first go-to moves that I think anybody who, whether you're training or not training, is something that I think makes you more like self-aware of your own body more than anything. So when you are kind of sitting in front of a screen or looking at your phone, you kind of think back to that drill a little bit and be like, oh, okay, let me kind of
Exactly.
roll back a little bit. And the very last one I want to touch on as well is the hips, right? And I think that one out of all of them is probably the most, I find, even me personally, almost most confusing to kind of get an idea of, like, okay, am I doing this right, or is it my hips, or is it my glutes? So what would you say is something that's very common that people come see you for and say, like, I think my hips are hurting, or you will assess to say, okay, it's somewhere in your hips that we need to strengthen or we need to treat.
Yep. So the hip is very important because, like I said before, the hip sits underneath the lower back. So anytime somebody comes in with a lower back issue, to me it's a hip issue as well. And again, if you go back to that reference, the lower back is usually unstable, so wonky. The hips would be very, very tight. So nobody comes into my clinic and say my hips are very loose. It's always my hips are very
Very
tight.
tight, yeah.
Again, practicing jiu-jitsu, our knees are always pulled towards our chest. Hips are always in a contracted position. And yeah, so a very common complaint would be hip tension or hip impingement, more common in a squat or even a deadlift. And yeah, if we use that recipe, you could definitely open up the front of the hip through some sort of stretching, foam rolling, using a lacrosse ball or some sort. But it's very important to do some sort of activation afterwards to cement the results. So again, a big issue that I see is people just stretch, and then that's it. There's nothing afterwards. So in a case with hip tension, open up the front of the hips or whatever's causing you pain, and then close off the opposite side.
Okay. Could you give us like
Example?
could you give us like a couple moves
Yep,
where
yep.
you would be able to open it up and then close
So
that gap?
assuming it's the front of the hip, I would do what we call a couch stretch. I think it's also known as like a lunge stretch. Essentially, you're going to be half kneeling on the ground, one leg in front of you, the other leg behind you at 90 degrees. And you simply just tuck your tailbone underneath for an increased stretch. And after that, I'd probably do the release I showed you earlier, where you have a pillow and a sock on the ground. You basically just lay on top of it, relax as much as you can. After all of that, I would start activating the backside, which is the glutes. To a clamshell exercise, it could be a single leg glute bridge.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a thousand different things. Just you need to make sure you activate the right tissues.
Right. And doing those, you know, I've been doing, you know, different variations of clamshells and mm-hmm. X walks and things like that, like yep. with a band. And I find that is so important to do.
Yes. Yeah.
Just to get your brain thinking, and you're thinking like, okay, we're using these muscles now.
Exactly.
And then if you go down, you do like a single leg bridge, that feels like the world of a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Because you're more stable now. You're not falling everywhere, right?
Yeah. And you just use the word stable and stability and mobility throughout our conversation today. And I find a lot of people get those two things mixed, or they think they're the same thing.
Yep.
Could you give us a brief breakdown of what stability is and what mobility is and the difference between the two?
Yep. I'll actually talk about those two along with flexibility, because Perfect. There's a lot of confusion.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
So flexibility is your muscles' ability. It's your muscles' range of motion, essentially. So an example with yoga, they're doing a lot of passive stretching, some static poses as well. That's really good to increase your muscles' flexibility. An example of flexibility is, let's say I ask you to touch your toes, and you go halfway, and you're like, I can't, like my hamstrings are just so tight, and they're not allowing me to touch my toes. That's flexibility. So the lack of flexibility. Mobility is your joint's ability to actually move around, which is a little bit different from flexibility, but looks very identical. An example of mobility is I ask you to squat down. And for you to squat down, your heels have to lift off the ground. That could be a mobility issue as well.
Or your lower back. So when you're just on your toes and your heels can't even touch, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That might be a mobility issue. So your ankles may not be as mobile as something else. Hence, you're trying to compensate with a different joint. Another example could be, let's say, in a squat, butt wink, which is also known as posterior pelvic tilt. When somebody squats down, the lower back just rounds completely, and nothing they do could fix it. No amount of cueing, you know, chest up, you know, like stand tall, nothing is going to work unless you mobilize a very specific joint. In a case like that, it could be your hips, it could be your ankles, it could be a lot of things. And then brings us back to the last one, which is stability. Stability is your body's ability to hold something into place. The most common one would be core stability, which everybody talks about if you have lower back pain. An example of core stability would be, let's say, if you're squatting, and I just made a post about this earlier on my Instagram. A lot of people, when they breathe very deep from their chest and not the diaphragm. So what usually happens is when they do that, their chest raises up, which creates a lot of stability in their chest and upper back, but a lot of mobility in their lower back. And that can usually be seen with their chest raising up, lower back arching, again, going on tippy toes. So there's, again, mobility, flexibility, stability, all different things. But you need to understand what you're lacking and what you need to improve on.
Hmm. And like, would you say like another example of like stability would be, you know, just trying to balance on one foot.
Yeah. That's another form of, that's actually like an assessment we could use
mm-hmm.
to test your stability, which I believe is called a stork stance test. Basically stand on one leg, and if you lack a lot of ankle stability, your knees are going to buckle everywhere. Believe it or not, a lot of people lack stability, but the symptom is usually a lack of mobility. So again, people like to stretch, mobilize. I kind of believe that with social media being so accessible now, everybody is on that mobility craze. So when something hurts, stretch it, mobilize it, but there's not enough emphasis on stability right now, which is, again, strength and conditioning, corrective exercises. It's just everybody assumes stretching is the answer right now.
Right. And it's true though, because, you know, especially I would say more so like what I see a lot of people do is like when their hips hurt. Or when they tell me they have, you know, hip pain, they will automatically go and they'll do some sort of butterfly stretch, or they'll also do some sort of like pigeon pose stretch,
exactly.
Thinking that's going to feel better. But I will also ask them as well, like, do you even feel better? And
yeah,
you know, I think it's more so like this placebo effect. Like, yeah, I'm stretching the area that is giving me pain.
Yep.
Or is causing me pain.
That's not the problem.
Yeah, but then when they get up from it, they don't feel
exactly.
no better, no worse from
exactly.
it. Yeah.
Exactly.
So,
that's the thing. We're always looking at the wrong spot. Mm-hmm. Like back pain, you look at the back, but realistically, you're supposed to look above and below it. Thoracic spine, hips. If you can improve the hip mobility along with thoracic mobility, why would the lower back have to work overtime for those two joints? It can actually be what it needs to do. So
exactly.
If you experience lower back pain, instead of stretching your lower back, try to stretch your hips and try to stretch your mid back.
Mm-hmm. So let's say like I'm someone and I have, you know, I have access to the internet and, you know, I know my body kind of okay. And I know the moves, but I don't have anybody like yourself that I can turn to and say, man, I don't have a James, I don't have a Jimmy, I don't have a good chiro or physio to kind of help me with this. What would you say is something that they can go and do? I mean, of course, they're going to go check out Loose Strength Therapy on Instagram to check out all the moves there. But, how can they know? And you've kind of touched upon like, if something causes you pain or something, you look above and beyond, or look above and below those areas. Is there any other kind of tips that you can give someone to kind of almost self-assess themselves?
In terms of like general pain or like something very specific?
Like general, like let's say like all of a sudden their elbow hurts, but you know, they can't afford to see somebody or they don't have anybody who they trust or they can go see to give them their assessment.
Yeah, that's a little difficult only because it could be a thousand different things. For example, we're using the lower back pain as an example right now. That could be 20 different things. And you might get lucky in YouTube, some sort of video, and it might work for you. But realistically, if it would come to like something very specific like that, I would try to go to somebody in person, of course. But if you can't, probably not the best resource, but social media could help.
Yeah.
You know, YouTube. I found a lot of exercises through YouTube that helped me, but again, I know what I'm looking for, and some of that may work for me, may not necessarily work for you. Like it could be two completely different problems. I may have a stability issue, you may have a mobility issue. So, yeah, it's a little hard to say.
Okay. Well, I will attest to like what you're saying, which is to look above and to look below. Like I had like really debilitating back pain when I was, you know, maybe I think 10 years ago. Granted, I was also extremely overweight at that time, but I went to go see my doctor. He prescribed pills. I went to go see an acupuncturist. Yep. We did acupuncture. I went to go see an RMT, a Thai massage therapist, a chiro, everybody. And it wasn't until like through, I'll say, self-experimentation where, you know, I was just looking at all these different things. And funny enough, this one guy was saying, well, let's strengthen your glutes, let's strengthen your hips.
Exactly.
And I thought, what a bunch of nonsense that was.
Exactly.
But I was so desperate. I was so desperate. And I started doing like single leg bridges. I started doing clams with bands and things like that. And then honestly, it was like a miracle pill. Like within a week, like that pain was gone. And, you know, it was one of the catalysts that helped me, you know, to rehab myself back and take a real assessment at my body to be like, okay, you know what also is there is like my trunk is my stomach area is very large. It's carrying a lot of weight the opposite way. That's putting pressure on my back, and my lower back. And, you know, I better start losing some weight too. Right. So, so those are all common things too.
Like obviously lifestyle makes a difference.
Yeah.
But that's a perfect example because you went to an acupuncturist, you went to an RMT. Those are passive modalities. That's somebody's doing something to you. There's also active, meaning you exercise, you strengthen. And again, that just comes back to my point. It's not all about mobilizing or getting treatment. If you can stabilize the joint or the area, why would it have to hurt? It's that simple, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, assuming it isn't a dysfunction.
Yeah. And now, like, I mean, you preach a lot and you talk a lot about preventative measures. And ideally, you don't want to see people, you know, in pain, right? You're trying to relieve this stuff.
Exactly.
And you talk a lot about, like, okay, well, let's try not to see me, but if by doing these types of moves beforehand. So, you know, why don't you talk about, like, some preventative measures? Like, you know, are there, like, one or two things that someone can do before they start working out, or one or two things that they should kind of think about before they start physical activity?
Yep. So one of the more important things prior to work was obviously a proper warm-up. That could be a cardiovascular warm-up. It could be some sort of stretching warm-up. Generally speaking, if it's such as you're working out, I would probably do anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes, some sort of cardio warm-up. It doesn't have to be like a treadmill or running around. It could be whatever you like, as long as it's an activity that gets your heart rate up. The benefits of that is obviously to decrease injuries, more blood flow to the body. Another example would be dynamic stretching. So the passive stretching is simply you holding a stretch, and dynamic is when you actually move into a stretch. Technically, according to this is just the theory, stretching doesn't really do much to the body. However, you can't deny that after you stretch, you do feel better. Personally speaking, I preach dynamic stretching before and possibly static afterwards. But yeah, dynamic stretching for the ankles, hips, mid back, and the shoulders are usually recommended prior to a workout. And assuming it's after workout, some sort of cool down, it could be some sort of passive stretch. You can just foam roll your back a little bit in your quads, but that's usually more than enough.
Mm-hmm. And like, I'd kind of touch on like dynamic stretching. That's something that I talk about a lot. You know, our muscles are, I would compare them to like elastic bands, right? Mm-hmm. If you're going to go and you're going to stretch an elastic band and it's cold, the likelihood of that thing snapping is going to be a lot higher, right? So why would you do that at the end? I get criticized a lot, you know, after I teach class or after I train somebody or I do like online training with them. They'll say, well, what should I do after?
Yep.
I said, cool. You can cool down. You can hop on a treadmill or hop on a bike for like 5 minutes, 7 minutes. Yep. They're like, well, what about stretches? And yeah. I say, well, you should be stretching when you're working out. Like, you should be going through the full range of motion of a push-up. Right. You should be doing a full range of motion when you're doing a chest press or a squat. Like, that's a stretch in itself, right?
Exactly.
And it's a loaded stretch on top of that.
It's a loaded stretch, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I'm a firm believer that I built. I'm 200. I'm 200 pounds. I'm kind of a stocky guy, but.
Mm.
People are usually pretty surprised at how flexible I am, and I attribute that to, you know, I've always followed like Arnold Schwarzenegger and a lot of bodybuilders, and you know they're doing these loaded stretches, and they're not doing like half, you know, half squats or half push-ups. They're going through the full range. I'll never forget like a video of Arnold doing a single arm bench row.
Okay.
And he's just like, that weight is almost touching the floor and he's pulling it back up without even twisting his body. I thought that's and before I saw that, I was just kind of like just doing like just letting the weight just kind of fall a little bit and then pick it up.
Exactly.
And when he was explaining, he's like, look, your lats, your back are, it's this very big long muscle, you know, you want to try to reach the floor and pull it back up again. And that has stuck with me for a very, very long time. And you know, and on top of that, you know, I think he was doing it shirtless, so you could see that back, right?
And everything. Yep.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
That's another important thing as well. So I always preach full range of motion, assuming that person can do it and has adequate mobility and flexibility. A topic would be obviously the squat. A lot of people would ask me, how low do I squat? Like, do I go ass to grass? Mm-hmm. Do I go parallel? Quarter squat? And again, it depends on your anatomy, your mobility, morphology, but my answer is always squat as low as you can until something, before something gives out, of course, right? Mm. For me, I could squat ass to grass, no problem, but I have to round my back. That doesn't mean I should squat ass to grass because I'm probably going to injure my back. I can only keep a neutral flat back, maybe a little bit below parallel, but anything under than that, my back just collapses. So that's a good example as well. You train to your end range of motion that your body allows you to.
Exactly. And the same thing too. You only load your body enough,
in the same
right?
Position. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw that video of that power lifter.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was doing like don't quote me on it, but I think anywhere between like 800 to like 1,000 pounds or something like that. And
squat or deadlift?
It was a deadlift.
Yep.
And his nose just started like halfway through, just started spewing like blood, and I was just like.
Yeah.
Buddy, you loaded that a little bit too much. Like that is not a normal lift.
Exactly.
Of course, it's not a normal human being to attempt something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you something. Maybe this is common or uncommon, but sorry, maybe this is something that you see or you don't see, but I see this with training. Do you see a difference between the types of injuries or types of pain that men and women have? Is there like a difference at all? Because I'll see in training, you know, women have generally have a stronger lower half, the majority of the males that initially will come train with me, and then the opposite effect where most males will have a much stronger upper body. So yeah, I've often wondered whether or not like they have different injuries.
I agree with that. Obviously with men, I call them mirror muscles, which is like your chest, abs, biceps. They're a little bit
never
more inclined
the back
to
or the legs,
those.
Right?
They're more inclined to working those out. And I do agree with you. Females have a little bit stronger of a lower body than an upper body. So I believe they tend to, you know, favor more squats, deadlifts, and whatnot.
Yeah, that booty, those booty of, workouts, right?
Yeah. In terms of injury, yeah, I guess if men are obviously favoring the upper body, they would have more upper body issues, and vice versa with females. But one thing I want to point out that isn't really talked about too often is women have more mobility generally than men because of estrogen. Estrogen is the female hormone, makes ligaments a little bit more relaxed. And I believe that they can get into, again, being more mobile, they're getting into positions a lot easier than us. One issue that I actually see quite often is females with hip pain and inner knee pain, specifically knocked knees or valgus. One of the reasons for that is if you look at the female pelvis, it's generally a little bit wider than a male pelvis. And if you actually look at where their knees are, their knees are actually inside their pelvis, or below, not directly below the pelvis, but a little bit more inwards, which is described as the Q angle. For men, generally our knees are just straight down from our pelvis. So with females, when they squat or deadlift, they might have a harder time keeping their knees tracked over their foot. And I'm sure you've seen people when they squat, their knees fall in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and again, it's a little bit more common in females because of that reason. They're already a little bit predisposed to more knee valgus than men because of your anatomy and morphology.
That's fascinating. I've noticed that, and I've noticed that most women do it. Yeah. And in my mind, I've always thought, okay, maybe they're just like loading the weights too much, and they can't do that.
They're at a disadvantage because their knees are already in, so it's gonna be they have to activate the glutes even more. So in some cases, it's going to be very difficult, but again, different cues, like instead of pushing your knees out, which it's not like I'm not a fan of it, it works, but a better cue would be like to corkscrew your legs into the ground. That would get a little more glute activation, so the knees actually go over the toes. Mm. But yeah, that's a very common injury that I see among females, would be knee pain, hip pain.
So when I get a woman to squat, and I notice that their knees are driving in towards each other, I'll usually will get them to put like a band in between their knees to kind of help a little bit. What I also find a lot is they'll go more like pigeon-toed. The feet won't run as parallel. Would you say like I should just leave them that way, or should I force them into getting their feet parallel?
So you're describing that the foot's rotating out more?
Yes. Both feet are rotating out more.
Yeah. So what that usually indicates is a lack of mobility, usually in the ankle. I wouldn't really mind having the feet out a little bit more, as long as it's not like an extreme amount, like 90 degrees or something. I would generally tell them to push their knees.
I'd be impressed if they could squat with their feet out 90 degrees.
I would tell them to obviously push their knees into the band, but just enough so the big toe does not leave the ground, because you want... Like, you're a lot stronger with your entire foot on the ground than, like, half your foot on the ground, of course. But, yeah, I wouldn't be too picky on that. As long as your knees are not caving in, I'm generally pretty happy. And, again, to correct that, you might have to create mobility somewhere else for stability, and it's usually found in the ankles. As long as your knees are going over the toes, I'm happy.
Right. Okay. And, you know, we're kind of touching on these things here. So out of the common exercises that are given, like let's say the squats, the push-ups, or the chest presses, things like that, would you say that you see people in the gym, or people that would you see them doing certain popular moves a little bit more incorrectly, which may cause more injury?
Oh yeah,
do you see, like, what would be like one or two of those moves that you see, like those common moves that you're like, oh man, this is something that most general population or even athletes kind of do incorrectly?
Yep. Well, I guess we'll use the squat and deadlift as an example. For the squat, there's 1,000 different things I usually see. Probably the most common thing in a squat would be hips shooting up too early during a squat. So my number one rule for a squat is your torso angle should always remain consistent throughout the range of motion. For example, if you squat and you're bent over like an extra 10 degrees, you should stay that angle all the way down and all the way up. A really big issue that I see is people assume in a squat you want to be as upright as possible or vertical as possible. And yeah, you can stay upright when you start, but the moment you sit down, your torso has to drop forward eventually.
Yeah.
So what usually happens is they'll start vertically, they'll squat down, they have to pitch forward. And to stand back up, they'll just shoot their hips up first, which would force the shoulders to drop down. And then they're using their lower back instead of their legs. Hmm. That's a very common issue. One easy way of correcting that would be temple squats. So simply have them squat down into their depth, hold it for a few seconds, and then tell them to drive their feet into the ground to stand up. Because a lot of times when hips prematurely shoot up, it's because they're pushing their weight too far back on their heels. And they start doing that weird... the weird looking squat, and then their torso angle doesn't remain consistent anymore, hence lower back pain.
Right.
For deadlift, most common injury or issue, not using their legs correctly. So what I mean by that is the deadlift is technically a lower body / back exercise. A lot of people assume it's strictly a lower back exercise though, so they kind of judge the workout by, if my back isn't sore, then I did a bad workout. One common issue that I see in the deadlift is when you start, it doesn't really matter where your torso angle is, to be honest, because when you lift the weight off the ground, your shin is going to be somewhat vertical to the ground anyways. But one common issue that I see is people don't use their legs correctly to lift the barbell off the ground to their knee. What usually happens is just shoot hips up all the way towards the ceiling, and then they lift the barbell off the ground with only the lower back, and then lower back issues. So again, another cue for that is to push your feet into the ground to stand up. Once the barbell has cleared the knees, then you could bring the barbell to the hips. Hmm. But yeah, when the weight gets heavy, it's a little hard to do that. And generally speaking, at a personal, like a PR attempt, it's not going to look that pretty to begin with. But if you can't maintain good form at, say, 70% of your load, why would you attempt 100% of your load, right?
Right. A common one that I see with a deadlift, and tell me if this is, if you see it as well, is I find that a lot of people don't use their upper back enough.
Yeah.
So they'll have a very like rounded shoulder even on the way, even like as they're picking it up, and it's like that's a lot of back. That's a lot of lower back in there.
It's more. I'm sure you've seen powerlifters, and they lift again crazy amount of weight. Upper backgrounds, mid backgrounds, lower backgrounds. I'm not okay with the lower back rounding. That's obviously a bad thing. Upper and middle back rounding, it really depends on the person. For example, if I had really long arms, it's very unlikely my upper back's gonna round because I can just literally squat down to touch the bar. Now I have a lot of clients with shorter arms, and they can't even touch the bar without rounding their upper back. So they physically can't even deadlift. Again, that's where morphology and anatomy comes into play. And in some cases, you might have to sacrifice it a little bit. Assuming you're stable and it's a position you've been in, I'm okay with it. But if you haven't been in that position and you're not familiar with that, you're probably going to get injured right away.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So we're coming to the end of the show here, and I was polling some of my Facebook community here. What's something that I wanted to ask? Some of the questions I want to ask you. Mm. And one of the most resounding questions that came up was, what are some tips to recover from muscle soreness, from DOMS?
Yep.
I'll tell you my answer. My answer has always been there really isn't much you can do other than the best thing to do is kind of keep your body moving all throughout the day.
There's
things like ice baths and massages, like all of those things will give you maybe some sort of like temporary relief or more so like a placebo effect relief. But coming from like a professional therapist yourself, like what would you say?
So assuming we're talking about DOMS, which is delayed onset muscle soreness, it's really not much you can do about that, because that's your body's ability to buffer lactic acid, of course. So the more you work out, the higher tolerance is, and technically the less sore you get. In terms of, I guess, techniques or modalities you can use to help with DOMS, people assume stretching could help, but when you stretch your muscle, it doesn't really increase your circulation or anything. Like what you mentioned is movement. So you could physically just be a little more active that day. We could do a little bit more active recovery, such as, you know, like walking on the treadmill. It could be, you know, light stretching or whatnot. That would go a long way. Obviously, nutrition goes along, like goes really long as well. But there's nothing really specific you could do to help you, I guess, recover faster from DOMS. And it's just accumulated over time. The more healthy you get, and the better your body is at buffering lactic acid, the less sore you become.
Could you touch on the nutrition part? What do you mean by that specifically?
Nutrition, obviously, like, it's going to vary from everybody. Depending on, you know, a specific diet plan that you follow, like paleo is really big right now. If it fits your macros, things like that. Generally speaking, I would, again, I'm not a nutritionist or anything, not prescribing anything. I would generally follow a 50% carb-ish diet, followed by like a 30% protein and a 20% fat diet. Obviously trying to get whole foods opposed to like fast food and everything. But yeah, as long as you have some sort of ratio like that, like 50, 30, 20, you should be ideally pretty good.
And you say you think you believe that that helps with muscle recovery?
In terms of DOMS or just like...
Yes, in terms of DOMS.
In terms of DOMS? I'd say indirectly, yeah, but not specifically.
Okay.
Again, obviously eating healthy could help with everything, injuries, pains, and whatnot. But I wouldn't say directly, but indirectly.
Okay. So no ice baths, no cryo chambers.
So ice baths and cryo chamber, which is like a form of like cryotherapy, they work in a different sense because, for example, if you jump in a pool of cold water, the theory is that your body's gonna all your blood in your body is going to pull towards your organs because it feels like it's in danger. So it's just a really quick way of taking the blood from the extremities and pushing it toward the organs. You get it out of the ice bath, and then magically the blood rushes back. Yeah, that's kind of like an old school style. Like I wouldn't say it doesn't work, but personally, it's a little too extreme for me.
Super extreme. I've tried it one time in my life. I would never try it ever again.
I'd rather just walk around for 30 minutes and get things moving, opposed to shocking my body. But again, I haven't personally tried it, so I can't say. But it wouldn't hurt to try it.
Okay. Well, before I let you go, you know, this is a podcast where my goal over here is to get people to believe that there is something for everybody. You know, you don't have to just go to a gym, and you don't have to be a power lifter. You don't have to, you know, run. You can do anything to get your own personal fitness started. You being a strength coach and also a therapist, I'm sure you run into people yourself that who are starting their fitness journey, or who you're trying to motivate them to get them started doing something to help them relieve from pain, to have some relief from pain. You know, what would be like one piece of advice that you give someone who's looking to get started on their fitness journey? What would that be?
Consistency. That's usually the biggest thing. I know with New Year's resolution coming around the corner, a lot of people be motivated to, you know, reach their goals and everything. One common, I guess, problem that I see with that is people get too motivated too quick. I know it sounds a little weird, but they'll go to the gym 5 days a week, and then work gets in the way, life gets in the way, and it'll become 3 days a week, 2 days a week, 1 day a week. I'd rather you just go to the gym gradually, 2 or 3 days a week, and then pick up the pace as months go on. And as long as you make a small habit, those habits will eventually become bigger habits, and eventually it's just something you do all the time, right? Another tip is try to do workouts you enjoy. If you're dreading going to the gym, you're probably not going to go back. And again, you don't necessarily have to go to like a weightlifting facility to train. You can do things at home. You could take up different classes or whatnot. But having a combination of everything, so like a little bit of strength training, little bit of cardio, some mobility training would go a longer way than just choosing one discipline over the other.
And, you know, and that's, it's so important because, you know, every time I bring on, you know, a health professional or anybody on, a guest on the show, I ask them this question. And at the end, it always leads to this. And I end every show with that whatever that you're doing, it has to be fun. Because if it isn't, you're not going to end up doing it, right? So, again, listeners, people that are listening, you're hearing from another professional here that you have to make this fun for yourself. You don't have to go to a gym if you don't want to go to a gym. Mm-hmm. You know, if you like playing soccer, just play soccer, right? And, you know, and I think people get really hung up with like, well, I can't play soccer every day. Well, you can't play soccer every day, but if you can play soccer once a week and it gets once a week for the next 52 weeks.
Yep. That's better than not doing anything at all.
Exactly. And think about it, that's like 52 hours of work that most people, that you don't even think is work. Right.
Exactly.
But I think people love to punish themselves.
Yep.
And they want to go and work out. Like you and I, we do jujitsu. We do martial arts.
Yep.
You know, because we like doing it.
Even though that's like, to me, that's fun. And it's just a bonus that I burn extra calories and get more fit.
Yeah.
But I don't look at Brazilian jiu-jitsu as a workout. It's just so much fun to begin with.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's the same as someone, you know, playing tennis or someone playing soccer or someone going to do dancing. Like, they don't look at that as
training,
as exercise. And yet you can't tell me that you're not getting a crazy workout from that. Right. You can't say that we're not getting a workout from what we're doing.
Exactly.
It just so happens that on the side that we also like lifting weights too. Right. So, So look, James, I really appreciate coming onto the show.
Mm-hmm.
If the listeners want to connect with you, if they want to see more of you, which they definitely should, and I mentioned that you're on Instagram, but you know, could you give them a recap where they can find you?
Yeah. So one of the best ways to communicate with me would be through my website. It's lewstrengththerapy.com. If you want to look at more of my content and what I do, Instagram is usually a better place for that. Again, it's lewstrengththerapy on Instagram. I generally post every other day, depending on what needs to be addressed that week. But yeah, other than that, you can go on my website. There's a little contact button on it. Shoot me an email if you have any questions regarding fitness, therapy, injuries, anything along those topics. Shoot me a message, and I'll be more than happy to help you.
Yeah, and that's it. And look, if all the video, all the exercises we just talked about, and all that, you know, I'll pull those together. I'll put that on the show notes. James's contact information, his Instagram page. Honestly, you got to check out James's Instagram page. Like, that is, he puts up some legit stuff. He puts a lot of effort, and it shows, because he cares for the people that are going in and looking at that stuff. So definitely go check him out there. Awesome. Thank you again, James. I hope you come back. I know my listeners are going to have a good time listening to this, and they're going to want more of it. So hopefully we can get you back on the show at some time.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Jimmy.
All right. Thanks, James. So that's it. That's a wrap. That's a wrap to another episode. I'm so happy to be back. And for all the listeners out there that took the time to message me, to show me some love, show me some support, and asking me to come back, I'm honestly blown away. You can't see this, but there's a little shed of tear coming down my eye, and it's a tear of happiness. And I want to thank you guys so much. I'm looking to come out with some banging episodes pretty soon. And if you have any questions, if there's something that you've been dying to know and you've been too shy to ask and you would love for me to cover, hit me up on email, jimmy@remixmyfitness.com. Don't forget to go to today's show notes, which is at remixmyfitness/week15, so you can see all the cool moves that James and I have been talking about. And just hit me up on social. I'm on social at remixmyfitness, Instagram, Facebook, and that's it. Instagram and Facebook, that's where I'm at. Okay, so until next time, which will not be like 3 months away from now. Okay, I promise. But until next time, go out, set some goals, challenge yourself, and make this exercise thing, this fitness thing, fun. Fun for yourself, okay? Take it easy. Peace.